All right, Alexander, let's talk about the stimulus, the $6 trillion rescue package on RT. There's an article written by Mitch Feierstein with the title $6 trillion rescue package, unaffordable bailouts and buybacks. Bend over. Here it comes again. I have to be honest, Alexander, I don't know which way I fall on this. I've heard analysis in all different directions. You have to do the stimulus. I've heard this is going to lead to inflation. I've heard this is going to lead to the stagflation. I heard this is a disaster. I heard this is exactly what the country needs. I've heard this is a bailout for Wall Street once again. I've heard that the money's going to be going to the people and they need the money. And I've heard so many different viewpoints on this stimulus package. But the more I hear about it, the more it really troubles me. I mean, I don't know. It just sounds like this thing is gigantic, enormous, way out of control.
I agree. It is way out of control. I mean, I have to say, when it was first proposed, it looked like a focus package. What has happened is it goes through the Washington machine. All the various lobbies, special interest groups, people like that start putting their own input in. And what you get is you get a package which has become completely unfocused and makes no sense, and which tries to bail out basically everybody with, I have to say this also, the bias being very, very much in favor of those who are, you know, who have the big companies, the big hedge funds, those sort of things. You know, it's the rich people. And so the result is you have a bailout which is not anywhere near as effective as it could be, not, I think, anywhere near anything like the kind of bailout that Donald Trump was initially looking for, and where the figures are just off the scale. I mean, you know, we're talking about $6 trillion. $6 trillion. I mean, this is money. This is such a vast sum of money. I mean, I can't imagine it, frankly. Now, given that the U.S. is already heavily in debt, how does it fund this? Well, obviously, it's going to not print it. It's going to electronically create a lot of this. But U.S. debt levels are going to skyrocket. And, you know, at some point, there has to be a point of, you know, beyond which it can't go. I'm not saying we're there, but we must be getting closer all the time. And it doesn't help when I see the U.S. Federal Reserve Board saying that they're going to go in for unlimited QE. QE is, of course, creating money electronically. Unlimited QE is infinite money. I mean, just think about that. Infinite money? I mean, since when in history have we ever had something like that? Now, can I just make a general observation? I think there is a fundamental fallacy behind many of these packages, which is that what is happening across the United States is that one part of the federal government is closing the economy down. I mean, it's doing this on purpose. It's purposefully closing down large sections of the economy in order to deal with the health crisis, which is underway. At the same time as that is happening, you have another branch of the federal government and the Congress and the Federal Reserve Board all working together to try to keep the aggregate economy at about the same level that it is in, that it's supposed to be in, even as the rest of the economy closes down. So you're getting this vast mismatch between what, you know, is achievable in effect through a stimulus and the amounts of money they're spending. Because, you know, how can you pour money in to maintain demand at the same time as you are artificially and quite intentionally closing demand down? It doesn't seem to make sense to me. It's a fundamental asymmetry. Now, I think some things had to be done. I think there had to be funds provided to people who are, you know, at risk of losing their jobs, many of whom are losing their jobs. There had to be a support provided to people in small businesses. Of that, there's no question at all. There had to be parts of the financial system had to be kept operating because you need people to be able to withdraw money from banks, to pay for things, not just essential things, but to keep some kind of economic system ticking over. But this seems to me to be completely over the top. And I think this is the point that Mitch Feinstein, who, by the way, I don't know him very well, but I've exchanged messages with him. I think that's the point Mitch is making. I think that this is just prime pumping at an insane level, far beyond anything that makes sense, which simply doesn't make logical sense given the kind of economic situation that we have now. So, stimulus, yes. Support for the economy, yes. This particular plan, I don't really think it's a plan at all, actually. I don't think it's going to work, and I don't think it's going to come together properly. I will say this, it does all depend an awful lot how long the health crisis lasts. If the health crisis ends in a few weeks' time, then hopefully most of this will be rolled back. And the damage done will be far less. But, you know, I'm hearing in Britain people talking about keeping the economy closed down for 6 months. If anything like that happens, then we're going to look at real damage.
All right. I want to get actually to the US. I also want to get to the UK because Mitch Feierstein's article also mentions the UK as well. I want to ask just a couple of quick questions.
Yeah.
What you described on the demand side of things and the supply side of things leads me to believe that we're not looking at a scenario based on inflation that's going to lead to inflation, but we're looking at stagflation. Is that correct? Yeah,
I think so. I mean, because for one thing, I strongly suspect a lot of this money isn't going to be spent on anything. Spend it on what? I mean, you can send it into the financial markets. Well, it will vanish down a black hole, basically. But inflation is only really going to take off if people on the streets are given thousands of pounds, thousands upon thousands of dollars, which they then all go out and try and spend on things. Well, that's not going to happen. That's not what this is proposing. And it's not going to happen anyway because everybody's locked up in their homes and many people are losing work. So they're going to be, if anything, I would have thought, saving whatever money they're giving. So I don't see this as a hyperinflation danger. I know there's some people who are talking that way, but that's not how it looks to me. But the problem is not, I think, a hyperinflation problem. It's a debt problem, and it's a debt problem that the federal government is going to be landed with, and it's going to be a debt problem that the British government is going to be landed with. And bear in mind, the British government has far less fiscal maneuver space than the US government does, because we have a hard currency in the pound sterling, but you know we don't have the world's reserve currency that the US does. So the point at which there will come a breaking point with sterling, when people start to worry about the government's solvency, that it seems to me is much closer. And bear in mind, we've just been through 10 years in Britain of conservative governments supposedly trying to fix the public finances because of the need to pay off, to close the budget deficits that were created during the 2008 financial crisis. Well, some progress had been made in that direction. In just a few weeks, that's all been blown away, and not just blown away, it's been buried. And we're in a far worse fiscal position now, far worse debt position now than we were in 2009, 2010. I mean, and can I just say, Jeremy Corbyn, who, you know, people, you know, criticized him during the election, he's now given an interview in which he said, well, you know, if you can spend all this money on doing all of these things, well, you know, I was absolutely right in the election. And when I said, you know, we could spend £40 billion on X, Y, and Z, well, we're not talking about £40 billion now. I mean, the Chancellor, our Chancellor, has talked about £350 billion. I mean, these are figures like we've never seen before in British history at any time. It dwarfs even the spending during the Second World War. And that's saying something.
Yeah, I remember I was reading a Zero Hedge headline a couple of days ago, and it said print $2 trillion. Why not print $350 trillion?
Well,
that was the headline. I mean,
well, it did. I mean, this is where the infinite money comes. I mean, this thing that the Federal Reserve Board said, you know, unlimited QE. That's, you know, that I mean, unlimited means no limits. In other words, infinity. I mean, are you going to? And bear in mind, we're not printing money anymore. That's the technology of the 1950s. This is electronically creating money. So there is no actual physical limit now to how much money you can create. And apparently, there is no conceptual limit either. You can literally create money in infinite quantities. At least that's what the Federal Reserve Board is saying. Now, you know, I am not a financial specialist, but it seems to me that this can't end well. If it actually happens, I'm not convinced in the end that it will. And as I said, if in two months' time this crisis, this health crisis, is passed, I think that we will see an awful lot of this money hasn't been spent, and we will see a major rollback. But obviously, some debt will have been created, some damage to the economy's fabric will have been done, and we will have to deal with those problems later. I think what, as I said, Trump envisaged initially was something quite different. But as I said, the people in Congress got hold of it, and it's just run riot. Can I say that there are parts of this package which seem to me unbelievably small-minded also? I mean, there's a regulation buried inside it which says that there can't be any assistance given to Donald Trump's companies. I mean, why insert that? And why punish Donald Trump's companies also? I mean, they provide people with jobs. He's in the hospitality and entertainment business, so he's going to be particularly badly hit by this. Why? That apparently the Democrats insisted on this. I mean, to my mind, that is one incredibly small-minded and incredibly vindictive.
Yeah, I mean, there's also provisions for funding like the Kennedy Center of the Arts and stuff like that. Just really just dumb stuff. Yeah. But
shut it down. Pay the wages of the people. But I mean, not on this kind of stupendous scale. Oh, you should have, it seems to me, this is a case, it seems to me, for flat one-off payments to people. You put a cap on how much you pay. I mean, that, which in fairness, our Chancellor in Britain has done. He said, you know, the absolute cap is £2,500 a month. No, you can't be paid more than that. But, you know, it seems to me that's what you do. And you can't expect that, you know, rich people can go on living the kind of lifestyles that they had before. And their businesses can't be expected to function at the kind of levels that they did before. You mothball things, you give people debt and tax holidays. Definitely you should do that. But this kind of package, I don't really think it can work. I don't think it has any real meaning in this situation. Can I talk about another financial package which was announced last week, which I thought was much more... Go on.
Right.
Go
on. Can I finish up a couple of thoughts while you're on the subject?
Yeah.
Because I have two more questions on the subject of what you just mentioned before, and I want to kind of wrap it up. Is this a bailout for Wall Street and big business? That's number one. And number two, can you explain what this means for the U.S. dollar? Mm-hmm. Because from what I'm understanding, listening to you, a lot of this entire package, this rescue package and the effects of it on the U.S. economy and the global economy depend on how long this crisis is going to last. This is absolutely critical.
Absolutely.
And maybe the play is via the Trump administration to get the package out there to calm things down a little bit in the markets, and then to try and shorten out the time before you get back to business as much as possible so that the damage isn't too severe. But can you explain if this is a bailout for big business and Wall Street?
Well,
what are the effects on the dollar?
I know a lot of people are saying that, and I think there's some justification in saying that. I think that to some extent it is a bailout for big business. But can I just say, the biggest bailout for big business has not been done by the federal government. It's been done by the Federal Reserve Board, which has been buying bonds. It's actually now buying bonds in the stock markets. It's buying bonds and equities, and that is a bailout for big business. This package, it helps big business, Wall Street more than Main Street, but it does, in fairness, have some things for Main Street. And you mustn't overlook the fact that if you crash big business completely, which is, I know some people are talking in this way, if you crash big business, you crash the economy. If you crash the economy, everybody loses their jobs. You have to support big business in order to keep the economy running and preserve it at some level. Now, what will it do to the dollar? To be honest, I don't think anybody can really say at this stage, because it depends so much on what will happen with the health crisis. But I think that is what the Trump administration wants. It wants to say to the people of the United States, we've passed this massive economic package. They hope this will calm the markets. They hope this will stabilize confidence. As I said many times, in this kind of situation, the appearance of action is often the most important thing. It's a form of action itself. And then hopefully all the measures that have been taken around the country, and there are measures being taken. I mean, some of them are, as is always the case with the US, it's often very confusing, and you get scrambled signals, and you get Trump and Cuomo arguing and rowing with each other. But actually, we mustn't overlook the fact that things are actually happening. Things are happening on the ground. And just to give one example, and I sent you some WhatsApp messages about this business about Trump, having a row with General Motors, GM, because they weren't producing enough ventilators. And it's ridiculed in the European media. I think it's exactly what this situation calls for. What Trump is doing ensures that GM will produce more ventilators. And that's what needs to happen at that stage. In some ways, this bailout package is theater. It's phoning up the CEO of GM to get him to make sure his company churns out more ventilators. That is the action the situation calls for now. But if this thing does go on for 6 months, then obviously, we're looking at a completely different world. I don't think it will, as I'm not an epidemiologist, but several people who do know these things have made the point to me that colds and flus and these kind of illnesses do tend to slacken off in the summer. We don't normally catch colds or flus in the summer, so why should we catch this infection then? So hopefully it won't be 6 months. It will be more like 2, at the most 3. And of course, all the steps that have been taken now in the United States and elsewhere will hopefully slow the progression of the infection even further, so that not too much damage is done at the same time. I did just want to talk about another economic package, which is the one that Putin announced. Because you see, that he doesn't have to worry about Congress or armies of lobbyists or people of that kind. So this is a completely different kind of package. It basically looks at doing many of the things that I said, using the tax system to support small businesses, using declaring a public holiday so that people get paid wages for a week, but at the same time there's inputs provided through all sorts of things. Also raising taxes on rich people by taxing capital outflows, which is something I think the Russian government has been wanting to do for a very, very long time. Now again, they found the excuse to do it, but it does two things. Firstly, it does strengthen the budget. It also strengthens the ruble, by the way, for what it's worth, because if people have less incentive to send money abroad now. But of course, it also signals to the general population that, you know, we are all in it together, and it's we're not just looking to help rich people. We're actually looking to help small businesses and poor people. So in that respect, I think this was a politically astute package. And of course, the numbers there are much more, well, rational. Putin is now looking to run a deficit, a budget deficit of around 2% of GDP. I mean, compare that with what the kind of figures we're talking about in the United States. So there is a contrast between a sort of focused, realistic package there and these, you know, absolutely fantastical packages that we're seeing in the United States and Britain. And by the way, also, to some extent, in Germany also. The Germans are going for it, 1 trillion euro stimulus package. I think they have the fiscal space to do it because Germany is also a nation of savers and they've been running a budget surplus. But golly, are they also going to see their debt levels rise? And bear in mind, they're around, 60, 70% of GDP anyway. Russia's is, 15%? I mean, it's a huge difference. So it's extraordinary to see the Western countries recklessly, irresponsibly, if you like, borrowing, raising credit, running massive deficits, creating money out of thin air to get themselves through all of this thing. The Chinese and the Russians, well, the Russians perhaps more than the Chinese. I mean, I know the Russian economic policies better than I know those in China, taking fiscally much more prudent decisions, it seems to me. But, you know, they do come from different situations. And of course, the Russians don't have the kind of maneuver room in terms of money creation and budget deficit running that European countries and the US does.
Boy, were sanctions on Russia a blessing at the end of the day.
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable.
Absolutely. I mean, if there hadn't been these sanctions, if their economy hadn't been cut off and insulated and become increasingly self-reliant, and if they hadn't paid off all their external debt, they would now be in an absolute hell. If this had been Russia as it was in 2008, I mean, they would be absolutely, on their backs. By the way, there was a very interesting article in The Economist. That's the British magazine, The Economist, which is, if I may say so, the single most extreme anti-Putin news magazine in the world. I mean, it absolutely hates Putin and everything he does and represents him in the most awful way. But even it admitted that Russia can sit back because, you know, it's ring-fenced itself from all the disruptions around the world and achieved a very high degree of self-sufficiency. But, you know, let's also say this too about the Russians. I mean, at the end of the day, it also depends, a lot depends on how well they handle the health crisis. There's the economic crisis, which is around the world, which is bad and perhaps in economic terms becoming existential. But it is the health crisis that is its ultimate cause. And if the Russians fail to contain and manage the health crisis effectively, then all the economic steps they've taken will not help them very much either. I think they do have it under control, actually. That's all the indications I've seen. But, you know, we will have to wait and see.
Yeah, the sanctions were a blessing, Alexander. God works in mysterious ways.
It is wonders to perform. Absolutely, yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's go back to the UK, though, and the US to wrap it up. Yeah. Alexander, let me take you back to Mitch's article, Bend Over, Here It Comes Again, the $6 trillion rescue package. And he makes a point. He singles out, actually, Richard Branson, and he makes a point that Richard Branson owns the majority of shares of Virgin Atlantic Airlines, an airline which will likely seek a $7.5 billion government bailout. He also asks the question, if Sir Stelios Hadjiwanu is also going to be asking the UK government for taxpayer bailouts. And let me read you a couple of paragraphs from the article. The UK needs to wake up. Remember Gordon Brown, the PM who claimed he ended boom and bust from 1999 to 2002. Brown bailed out the bullion banks by selling all of the UK's gold for an average of around US$275 an ounce. At today's prices, that gold would be worth over $10 billion more than the price Brown sold it for. In 2008, Alistair Darling and Vince Cable bailed out Royal Bank of Scotland, Lloyds Bank, and the Royal Mail. Remember how RBS boss Fred the Shred Goodwin destroyed RBS and walked away with over 20 million pounds in compensation? Goodwin's pension is worth 17 million pounds, yet UK taxpayers remain on the hook for those bank shares 12 years later. In the USA, the government is about to launch another bailout program worth at least 6 trillion USD. Warren Buffett, one of America's richest men, is a majority shareholder in several of the US airline companies seeking bailouts, nearly all of whom used excessive leverage to repurchase shares and pay shareholders like Buffett hefty dividends and funded the incentive-based CEO bonus pools. Why should taxpayers be on the hook when leverage goes wrong because CEOs suck the lifeblood of their companies? After handing out trillions in bailouts and guarantees in 2008, a furious public demanded answers. Politicians in the UK and US governments held public inquiries and promised that irresponsible corporate leaders would be held accountable and that similar bailouts would never happen again. In the 2020 $6 trillion bailout package tells us these promises were lies. What do you make of
he's making extremely powerful points. I mean, I do not understand why the British taxpayer has to keep Richard Branson in his magnificent residence in Holland Park, which I have seen. I mean, that seems to me crazy. And if I may say, all his various airlines and railways, things of that kind, they do not serve an essential function. Most of the airlines that Mitch is talking about in the US, it's the same. It's the same with Warren Buffett and his various investments. I mean, there's no logic to this. And I think that when all this is over, we do need in Britain and the United States and in other countries too, to look at the way our economies are run. And can I just say something, if I could just talk about Mitch Feinstein. He wrote a book, Planet Ponzi, years ago, which is still, in my opinion, one of the most interesting reads on all this, on all these issues about the way in which the economies have been run in the West. What I'm going to say about this is one little point. I think Mitch is making some very, very valid points. I think that one person who might be receptive to some of these arguments is, in fact, Donald Trump, who came in talking about reindustrializing the homeland, the United States, and moving the economy towards a more stable basis. Somewhere along the line, he got hooked on this idea that, you know, the health of the economy depends on Wall Street. And we had this period of time when he was going on and on about, you know, Wall Street hits a new record, and this somehow shows how well the economy is doing under my stewardship. I think he needs to acquaint himself with some of Mitch Feinstein's points and points which other people are making, and do so carefully and thoroughly. But having made all those points, I come back to this. There are some industries that do need to be bailed out. You can't just close down all the banks. You have to have a banking system. You have to have a financial system. You have to have big industrial companies still operating. Some kind of support from the federal government and the British government for core businesses is essential. Some support for small businesses and for people who are working, it seems to me, is essential, because we don't know how long this crisis is going to go on for. If it goes on, as I said, for 2 or 3 months, then the damage is containable. But if it goes on for 6, then we have, at some point when we get out of this, we've got to have an economy left to work with, because otherwise we're going to be in a far worse position than we would be in if there were no bailouts and stimulus packages at all. So, yes, we need to look at these things very carefully. We need to listen to what he says. We need to hold our leaders to account. We need to act carefully and properly on the kind of advice that Mitch Feinstein is giving. To be frank, I don't see in Britain much sign of that. But I just get to throw this in now. If you want to move towards a more equal and stable world economically, then you might get some of that with Donald Trump. You're certainly not going to get it with Joe Biden.
Do the airlines fall into that category, Alexander? Does Boeing fall into that category of essential industries?
Well, I'm going to be absolutely straightforward. I think Boeing should be nationalized. I think there's been major problems with Boeing for a very, very long time. But I think it is still a core company in the US industrial system. I don't say it should be nationalized indefinitely. What I mean to say, nor am I saying that, you know, all the shares should be completely obliterated. But what I mean is the US government needs to take it under control, send in people to sort it out, sack its management, bring engineers back in and put them in charge and reorganize it in that way. It is one of the iconic companies of the United States. I mean, I remember flying Boeing 707s in the 60s as a small child. I mean, you know, but it is the US's primary aircraft, big aircraft manufacturer. You can't just simply close Boeing down and leave the space open to Airbus in Europe, which, by the way, has serious problems of its own. And that's another case, you know, for another story. But also further down the line, we're going to get big challenges on that front from the Russians and the Chinese who are working together. If the United States wants an industrial future, it needs to protect its aircraft industry. And that means taking a hard look at Boeing and seeing what it can do there. I think that creative destruction, as they talk about it, has its limits. And that is one of them. But it cannot be allowed to continue as it is doing now. I mean, because Boeing is clearly a very, very, it's clearly lost its way.
All right. Alexander McCurse, Editor-in-Chief of The Durant. Thank you very much, guys. If you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on that notification bell and make sure you are still subscribed to our channel. YouTube subscribes our viewers all the time. And it's very, very frustrating, but we can't really do much about it except ask you to just check your subscription with our channel. And also look for us on iTunes and on SoundCloud for an audio copy of this video. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. Your donation really helps us out a whole lot. And of course, go to the Durant Shop and pick up some merchandise, magic mugs, and polo shirts. And we are not getting any bailout money. No. Whatsoever. We don't ask for it either. Check out our merchandise and enjoy it.
We certainly don't. Absolutely not. You know, we do depend on, you know, the quality of the product we produce, both in terms of our videos and, of course, by the way, in terms of what we sell on in our shop. We make a point of selling absolutely top quality merchandise. When Alex and the rest of us talked about setting up the shop, we made a decision, which Alex was absolutely the person who, I should make this clear, initiated it, that we go for quality as a sign of respect to our viewers. So you don't get cheap T-shirts and trashy mugs for us. You get superb quality magic mugs and amazing shirts instead. And these are, if I may say, the best mugs I have ever had, the best tea and coffee mugs I've ever had. And I have been through scores of hundreds in my time. I became a coffee addict when I was still at school, a coffee and tea addict when I was still at school. And I'm also somebody who fumbles and breaks things all the time. And I've had so many mugs. I'm not even going to try and guess how many. These are the best. They are so beautiful to hold. They are so strong. They keep your tea and coffee so perfectly at the right temperature. And can I just say also that, you know, in good quantities, I mean, because you don't want to rush back and have to refill your mug all the time. It's boring. If nothing else, you can actually have it there by your desk and you can drink from it and it's still hot. And it's wonderful, and it feels a joy just to hold it. And as I have pointed out, I'm borrowing my wife's mug. This is her particular favorite mug. Just to make known to Vera that I've got her her message. This is the state of arms, her coat of arms of the Russian Federation, not of the city of Moscow, as I had believed. And by the way, I got confirmation of this because I was actually watching Putin's address to the nation. I watch all the addresses of to the nation of all the world leaders, Boris Johnson, Donald Trump, and Putin. And I saw that above his desk, this coat of arms was there. It's actually above, you can see it when you go onto the photos of Putin at his desk, you will see this very coat of arms is there. So he sees it every day when he goes to work. And it's got St. George slaying the dragon of fake news and untruth, which is what we aim to do on our channel. And it's also got the Russian double-headed eagle, which is different from the one of the Duran itself, which you will find on our amazing polo shirts, which is one we designed ourselves, and which shows the double-headed eagle. It's the double-headed eagle that hovers above the world and keeps an eye on all that is going on. And it's on this amazing, fantastic polo shirt, best polo shirt I've ever had, and I've had heaps, by the way. I've had lots of them ever since, by the way, I saw Sean Connery wear one in Dr. No when he was playing 007. But I think this is actually a much better polo shirt than the one that Sean Connery was wearing in that film, because it is so comfortable. It is 100% cotton. It is beautifully put together. It looks smart and casual, and you can wear it in the most amazing places. And when you do, people actually do ask you about the Duran double-headed eagle, even well, perhaps especially those who don't watch the Duran are intrigued by what this is. So this is the best polo shirt you can have. You can find them in many colors. You can find shirts of other T-shirts also in many colors, long sleeves and short sleeves. You can also find V-neck shirts. You can find hats, hoodies, and stickers, all of exceptional quality. You can also find e-books on subjects like Russiagate and Ukrainegate and Brexit and Epstein. We're going to be making more of them. The person who helps them make them, Paul, is somebody you should always also look up. I think Alex will tell you all about him, because he is the best transcriber for these sort of things. He does a superb job. So you will only get quality from the Duran. And can I say, come to our shop, buy yourself these great things, support us in the work we do, and be the proud owner of all of them.
I'll put a link for Paul's services in the description box. Alexander McCurse, Editor-in-Chief of the Duran, thank you very much. One quick note, just of interest, Alexander, I just got this notification via Zero Hedge. After receiving $25 million Corona bailout, JFK Center stops paying musicians.
Well, there you go. Just what we said. I mean, what kind of people are these? Maybe a phone call to Attorney General Barr and the Justice Department and the FBI might be the right response to news of this kind. I'm not making any allegations. People are entitled to due process, but I think that's shocking. That's absolutely shocking news.
All right, we'll end it there. Take care.
We'll end it there. Right.